Everybody, I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Yes,
grateful to be alive and sober and at a meeting. Sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous, which has revolutionized my spirit and placed me here now in the moment with you, present to this moment, awake to this moment, and to carry a message to someone who may be desperately seeking a solution to something called alcoholism. I do not practice conventional Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not in the business of hurting anyone. I will not tell you to make 90 meetings in 90 days. I will not tell you to put the plug in the jug. I will not tell you to double up on your meetings, because none of that stuff ever worked for me. I will talk to you about my experience, not opinions I don't have an experience with. I will share with you experience that I've had that has worked for me. And perhaps I will disturb you many times on the question of alcoholism. I know my sponsor disturbs me regularly on the question of alcoholism. But I can't lie to an alcoholic. I'd rather disturb you and get you angry with me. In fact, if you walk out, I'm sorry, but I'd rather do that and have you come back with truth than to pat you on the back and walk you to the next drink. I won't do that. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm here tonight recovered. I say God separated me because I didn't quit drinking, although I tried many times. I didn't stop drinking, although I tried many times. And this loving power separated me and has kept me separated. I will not turn a miracle of God into a personal accomplishment and tell you, well, I quit drinking, because that implies self-reliance. Now, if that was the case, I wouldn't be making AA meetings. I just put the plug in the jug and go home. See, putting the plug in the jug works for the moderate drinker, works for the hard drinker. But for the guy on page 21 like me, I fall short with that. I mean, I've quit drinking many times, only to get drunk again. I've stopped drinking many times, only to get drunk again. And really, through divine intervention and awakening of my spirit, God has kept me separated. And separated me June 23rd, 1988. And I will tell you, over the last 16 years, I've had experience with dramas of life that have been joyful and very downright painful. And if it was up to me to keep sober, you would have a different speaker here tonight leading this meeting. But this God gives me grace. I say I'm recovered for a few reasons. First, my big book promises me that right in the beginning. I've come to experience being recovered from what a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And the great thing is, when we continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness, we start to work on something called alcoholism, not only being separated from alcohol, but alcoholism. And we start to grow up spiritually, have experiences with this power, deep and effective new spiritual experiences with this power. See, we can have an experience 3, 4, 5 years ago, but are we replaying that experience over and over again, or are we constantly seeking new experiences with this power? And when we do that, we get integrated with this power, and we're here now, present to the moment. And I can tell you that when you experience this power, there's one word for it. It's called bliss. Because any other word would fall short anyway when we speak about God. Coming into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988, I had no plans or designs to do anything like this, to be a regular member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to quit drinking, none of it. But God got into my life at a place of desperation, the bitter end our book talks about. And at that moment, I never forget, I was in a hallway and there were no reservations, no lurking notion of any kind. There were no bargaining chips for me. It was drink and die, and I didn't want to die anymore or seek help. And God got in and separated me. And I'm very grateful for the process that has brought me here, because it wasn't like that in 1988. I'm very, very grateful for this. My home group is a Way Out group. It's a group I became a member of about 2 years ago, and officially a member right now. And I have found when this power wants to move you, you're getting moved. I was a member of a group called the Free Spirit Group over in Brooklyn for years, since I came home with about 10 months sober from Minnesota. And I was brought to the Free Spirit Group, and I was taken out to Staten Island, and I'm currently living in New Jersey. Many times when this power is moving me, I kind of hold on to my chair and say, God, I don't really know if you got know what you're doing, if you got my plans and designs down right here, because I wrote a different script. At the end of the day, I'd rather, from my experience, be moved by this power than driven by God. And that's one of the considerations I ask you to sit with. Are we being moved by God or driven by fear? Am I having inspiration come to me or inspiration come from me? And how's my internal life? How's my meditative life? Things to consider as we walk through this. Because if we are awake, that will manifest itself in our personal relationships, in our external world. It will show up. That doesn't mean that everyone's going to do what we want them to do, but the way we walk through it is certainly different than if we were in here untreated, not awake. I have found it's about being separated and staying separated from the drink, but there's so much more to it. There's just so much more beyond this. For example, we have three sides of our triangle: fellowship, service, and recovery, correct? Those things alone will not bring me to a place called recovered. In fact, making meetings will not keep me recovered. Just working out of this book will not keep me recovered. Doing service will not keep me recovered. What keeps me recovered is a loving God. And I do all of those things, and this work brings me to that power, to have an experience with that power. I do inventory to see truth, to take truth to God. My experience has been this. My whole life was driven by fear and needing a whole lot of drink to get through it. And since I've landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's about having experiences and a whole lot of this God. This whole thing we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is about God. And if you think it's something else, so be it. But that's not been my experience. All the things we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, all the step work, the fellowship, the service, is about having an experience with God. Great musician years ago, Jimi Hendrix, said, "Are you experienced?" My question to you, are you experienced? Are you having an experience with this power? And that's a yes or no answer. Now, your ego will tell you, "Oh, sure I am. I make 10 meetings a week. I sponsor, 200 people." Are you having an experience with this power? And you'll know it. I'm just curious about a couple of things. How many people here tonight have never gone through this book? One person, two people. Great. Welcome. How many people feel they have gone through this book, have gone through the steps? Uh-huh. And having the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps? I'm just curious. Uh-huh. And those people who just raised their hands, you don't have to raise your hands now, but I'm curious, how are we doing with amends? Any outstanding amends left? Because if we have outstanding amends that we could make and we're not, a teacher in my life has told me maybe we've had an experience as a result of steps 9.5. What happened to the rest of the amends? Have I really had an experience with this power if I have amends out there tonight that I could be making, but my ego said we can wait till tomorrow? And we become a prey to comfort, comfortability, and we get stuck on the second half of the first step. Well, my life is manageable. I feel good. I have a job. My kids love me again. My wife lets me back in the bedroom. I have new clothes on. I'm feeling okay. I have a new car. I have some money in my pocket. Those amends that I was willing to go to any lengths to make, suddenly I'm not going to any lengths for. So what am I doing about that? And how come I'm not making them? Have I become the power? Because it's subtle. Have I become the power and is ego running my life? Because it won't tell me it's doing it. This illness will not tell you, by the way, I'm running your life again. What we start to flatline in Alcoholics Anonymous. So certain things to pay attention to as we walk through this. The other thing I like to throw out for consideration, a book talks about we seek this with the desperation of a drowning man. And I remember when I first was approached with this work, I sought it with the desperation of a drowning man, like when I was brought to Alcoholics Anonymous, the desperation of staying away from the first drink. I'll do anything to stay away from the first drink. Well, what about when you go through the work a while? And you've been in here a while, I should say, and you've gone through the work, and you're working with disciplines, you have a meditative life. And then it's time you get that nudging deep down in your gut, the quiet voice tells you, need to go through this again. Well, how do we approach the work the second time? I just came through this work for the third time. How do we approach it? Will we have the same desperation to stay away from the first drink the third or fourth or fifth time as we did the first time? Probably not. But do we have the desperation to seek this power? and not treat the work as a chore. Well, I have to do my fourth step. I have to write inventory. I have to do all these things. Or we treat it as, I get to do this. I get to do this work. I have an opportunity to do this work to experience more of my God and get more things removed, more belief systems removed, more judgments and conceptions, prejudice, all of it removed, to stand before our Creator free. I got to tell you, I was a little nervous walking in here, and I saw Barefoot Bill, and he told me my hair was okay, so I feel much better now. Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it. Great stuff in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. You'll see promises. We'll see warnings, a lot of considerations to take a look at. And one of the first things I was brought to in this book, I'm working out of a third edition, by the way. I don't think the fourth edition has this, but about two-thirds of the way down, it says on this little fly page, but the basic text, pages 1 to 164, have remained unchanged. This is the AA message. This is the message we're supposed to have an experience with and bring to another alcoholic. Nowhere in my big book does it say things like, don't drink and go to meetings, or meeting makers make it. The basic text, pages 1 to 164, have remained unchanged. This is the AA message. So the question I have to sit with is, what message am I carrying to someone who's going through the book for the first time right here, guy behind him? What kind of message am I giving him? Am I telling him to, or her, to hang in there? Because you'll hear that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Hang in there. You know, here's money, call me if you need to drink. And maybe because those people don't have anything else to offer and their ego won't allow them to say anything different, like go see Mike, go see Chris, go see Rainey. No, they'll say, we'll double up on our meetings, rather than carrying a message in his book. They haven't had one. So people die in Alcoholics Anonymous because the message has gotten so gobbled and watered down. And we're out there trying to save alcoholics, but they're dying right in here. Because a new person walks in the door and we still think maybe we're the most important person at a meeting. Wrong. They are. That's why I'm here tonight. Stay sober and maybe pass a message on. What message am I passing on? Is it an experience from this book? Now, somewhere in my book, at the very beginning, it says, upon therapy for the alcoholic himself, we surely have no monopoly. So people do this other ways. People find religious groups to join or whatever they do. But if I have to share my experience, if you're coming to me and you invite me here to share, this is where I come from. This is how I've been brought up, and these have been my experiences. And again, if I disturb anyone on the question of alcoholism, that may be a great thing. I won't share anything that is not in this book or from my experience. We go to the title page and we look at the first promise in this book, Recovered. It says Alcoholics Anonymous, the story how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And you could circle the word recovered if it isn't already. And it's going to later on tell us that we recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, recovered. See, we can say I'm recovering and excuse a lot of inappropriate behavior for people who are supposed to be on this path, right? Well, I cheated on my wife, I'm cheating on my taxes, I'm shortchanging my employer, but I'm recovering, that's why. I have defects and triggers, you know. But why would God shortchange me and keep me in bondage of self-recovering when, in his infinite power and grace, could bring me to a place called recovered? It's a promise in my book. And again, what great news it carries to someone who's new, that we can be brought, we get brought, we get taken to a place called recovered. And it's the first promise in my book. Now, I don't know how many of you have a circle and a triangle, but if you don't, in that little spot on the page, if you can draw a circle and a triangle, that'd be great. I mean, many of us come to Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe not in this meeting, but many of us come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we see the circle and the triangle, we have no clue. We talk about three legacies, and some of us don't know. Because we have to not only be awake, but also informed. On the bottom of the triangle, I'd like you to write the word recovering, and next to that, big book, 12 Steps. And on the left side of the triangle, if you could write the words unity, fellowship. And on the right side, did I say the right side? Left side of the triangle, write unity and fellowship. And on the right side, if you can write service, carrying the message in this book. We're brought to this fellowship in the condition we're brought here in. And in this fellowship, we get brought to a program, hopefully, in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not in the program. We don't come to the program. We're brought to this fellowship, and in here, we're given this program, this wonderful program from the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And we wake up. We have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And what do? We go back into the fellowship, armed with the facts, awake, and pull out another drunk in service. Comes of Age says the basic text, the basic service we do here is carrying a message, one drunk to another. That's what we do. We go back into, in a form of service, and work with another alcoholic. Dr. Bob said love and service. Some of these steps down, love and service, love and service. So I'm around here a little while, and I'm going through the steps. Do I have any prospects? Am I taking anyone through this work? And before I continue, there's a couple of things I'd like to talk about. Our chairperson read this layaside prayer. I go through this work for the first time. I have an experience because of this work and start to have an experience with my God. And I'm working with disciplines in 10 and 11 and helping others in 12. And I was doing that for a while, a long time. And then we have something called reemergence of ego. And I thought I was managing my own life. And I start to experience some current agnosticism. And none of it told me that was going on. The best word to explain what I was experiencing was flatlining in Alcoholics Anonymous. So what do? New sponsors put in my life, and I would hear people talk about this thing called the set-aside or the lay-aside prayer at meetings, how it was so wonderful, and they're having great experiences with it. And I had also acquired contempt prior to investigation, so I would sit wherever, sitting in a room, moving towards the back little by slowly, and they would talk about this lay-aside prayer, and I would fill up with anger. Because I would tell me, where in the big book is the lay-aside prayer? I would hear people talking about this, and I started to hate what I feared. I started to dislike what I didn't know, rather than being having an open mind and an open spirit, right? That was not what I was experiencing. And then my sponsor gives me the very first assignment going through this work again, and that is the lay-aside prayer. And I experienced that contempt, and I shared with him my problems with this prayer. But I was willing to go to any lengths, and I start to work with the lay-aside prayer. I did it this time again through the first three steps. It's a wonderful prayer. I had some neat experiences with it. I was under the impression with the lay-aside prayer, I've shared this many times, that what I was doing was telling God, everything you've given me is not good enough, so I got to cast it aside. That's what I heard when I heard that prayer. And all I was doing was being open, asking God to make me open, to make room for new. And my spirit was made open. And I got room for new and have new experiences. So I share that if anyone's having a problem with the prayer like that. Let's go over the table of contents. If we can break this down a little bit so we know what we're looking at. The first 43 pages of this book are going to talk about step one, by the way, as we go through this. And maybe if you're not convinced, if you're an alcoholic here tonight, maybe by going through the first 43 pages and having some experience with this, maybe then you'll be convinced. The first time I went through this work, I was given spiritual homework, is the only way the only word I can think of. Assignments out of this book to have experiences with, to diagnose where I was at. The second time I went through this work, I was given different type of things to look at in step one. This last time around, I went to page 52 with our bedevilments, which I'll get to in a second, and I had to take a look at where I was with every sentence. What kind of current unmanageability was I experiencing? What type of current agnosticism was I experiencing? How much fear was I experiencing, which usually meant I was in self? And I had to take a look at that and go through doctor's opinion. And you know what? The work meets you where you're at. Because if we're around here a while, as I said earlier, it may not be about the drink at that moment as we're going through the book, but we can apply this to where we are currently, now. And there's a solution. We're going to be looking at the mind, by the way. And more about alcoholism, we're going to be talking more about the mind. In chapter 2, agnostics, we'll be introduced to step 2. In how it works, we'll be looking at the methods for steps 3 and 4. The chapter into action, we'll be looking at the methods steps 5 through 11. And when we get to working with others, we'll be looking at working with others. That's our 12th step. And when you look through this book, when you get there, you notice they don't talk about having had a spiritual experience. They just get right into working with others. Why is that? Because you've had an experience already. Step 10 tells us we've entered the world of the spirit. We've had an experience somewhere. Before we hit 12, we had an experience with this power, and our job now is to go back in and work with others. And they give us some general guidelines on how to work with others. Take a look at the preface. Second paragraph, it says, because this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery, there exists a sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left untouched. I don't know how many of us are doing a service like GSRs or DCMs, but they put out a fourth edition, and they had to change some things in the fourth edition. And the information I got was that not enough of us were attending meetings where they were discussing what to do with this fourth edition big book. And we got what we got when it came out. For example, earlier I read, but the basic text pages 1 to 164 remain unchanged. This is the AA message. When the fourth edition came out, I don't even know if it's in there now, that was left out. Now, how did that happen? So my book tells me here has been left untouched, but I speak for myself, need to be careful about what's going on when they do these things, when they revise these books, when they put new editions out. Because this message has saved my life and many others. What am I doing to protect it? Forward to the first edition. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered, you could circle that word recovered, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind, the obsession to drink, and body, and that's the phenomenon called craving. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, there's that word again, is the main purpose of this book. And that, for me, is what I'm supposed to be doing as a sponsor. Show another drunk precisely how I have recovered from having an experience with this book. If you can circle that word precisely, and if you like in the margin, you can write the word precisely, the word clear cut, the word exact. Our book will use words like that to describe the directions here. They won't tell you, well, maybe it's a good idea to try a fourth step. They will give you specific directions on how to do step 4. Forward to the second edition is going to talk a little bit about our history here, and I have some stuff I like to read about it. And we'll talk a little bit about the Oxford group, where we kind of like came from. A gentleman by the name of Frank Buckman started a group called the Oxford group. They got their name, the Oxford group, or the Oxford group is because there were students attending Oxford University, and the thing was to change the world by changing individuals, by having some sort of experiences with the information they were giving out. And these students were going around, and they got called the Oxford Group. I think it got changed to Moral Rearmament or something to that effect. But that's where we came from. And they had four absolutes, purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. If you look at page 292, they have, in the third edition, they have the six tenets of the Oxford Group. That's what Dr. Bob was doing. That's what Bill was doing. And I can read a little bit of history here. It's kind of a synopsis, a little bit about us, just so we know what we belong to here. It says almost every AA member knows that two dramatic encounters in the mid-1930s were key events that helped bring Alcoholics Anonymous into existence. The first of these encounters was EBT's visit to Bill W. in 1934, when Bill sat drinking in the kitchen of his Brooklyn home. The second great encounter came about 6 months later and helped spark the actual founding of the AA movement. That, of course, was Bill's famous meeting with Dr. Bob in Akron, Ohio, on Mother's Day 1935. Today, both meetings are rightly regarded as the early seeding of AA, but in fact, they were also new plantings of work by the Oxford Group, the inspirational fellowship which nurtured many of the spiritual ideas and practice that became essential to Alcoholics Anonymous. Back in New York, the Oxford Group was also highly active at its national headquarters in Dr. Sam Shoemaker's Calvary Church, where Ebby T. and Bill received much valuable help. Dr. Sam was virtually the U.S. lead of the fellowship and was the ideal person to become Bill's spiritual mentor. As Bill later said, the early AA got its ideas of self-examination, acknowledgement of character defects, restitution of harm done, and working with others straight from the Oxford Groups and directly from Sam Shoemaker and from nowhere else. Sam's teaching did most to show us how to create the fellowship climate in which we, alcoholics, may survive and proceed to grow. So there's some things, you know, with AA, when I first came in here, I thought AA started when I walked in the door. But there's a whole history behind us, a whole legacy that preceded our entrance in here. I think it's really important the way I've been brought up that we know where we come from, understand where we come from. It makes us better members, not only to be awake, but also informed as we go along. What do I belong to? What is Alcoholics Anonymous all about? How am I doing at my business meetings? Am I informed of my traditions? Have I had an experience with those traditions and then taken them into my personal life? What am I doing about that stuff? Because you know how business meetings can go. You know how GSR meetings can go. If you say you love everybody in AA, you're not attending any of those meetings. Most people are making, or some people are making, you know, calls on being uninformed. Well, I feel this way or I think that, and disregarding traditions, etc. What I'd like to do is, if it's okay with you guys, is get into doctor's opinion and talk a little bit about step one here. Okay. Doctor's opinion by this gentleman, Dr. Silkworth, who treated Bill and many other alcoholics at the Towns Hospital in Manhattan, whose people suffered from alcohol and drug addiction. And Bill showed up there several times. And then Bill had an experience sitting in a Towns Hospital that revolutionized his life. He caught fire and knew he had to pass this on to others and finally hooked up with Dr. Bob, and we're here today. But Bill was a hopeless alcoholic like many of us, who tried lots of ways to quit drinking and never could until he hit that place that I described earlier about the bitter end and had an experience in the Towns Hospital. Dr. Silkworth is going to talk about his theory as to what we suffer from. If you're around here a little while, you know he was inspired by this because true words were never written about alcoholism. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader, that you and I, will be interested in a medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. And I remember the last time I went through this work, my sponsor had me circle the word plan of recovery. I think that was pretty basic. And he says, how many times we watch people die because they don't follow a plan of recovery? Now, if you were sick with some sort of ailment, you would go to a doctor, he'd give you a prescription, give you a plan of recovery if you had the flu, and you'd follow it to the letter to get better so quick. Because I can't take the pain of having the flu, whatever is ailing me. Yet we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they give us a plan of recovery in the first portion of this book and we tweak it a bit. I don't need to do that. Those are any lengths I really don't want to go to. And then we start to get sick and some of us go out and drink and die. We flip over to what I have is XXIV. It says, the physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcohol torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. And we're going to flip-flop from back and forth between body and mind here. Because I can tell you many times people have told me, Pete, why can't you just have one or two and then stop? I remember one New Year's Eve, a relative said to me, you can have a little champagne, it won't hurt you. It's just champagne. I celebrated that night for about 6 months on a drunk. It kicked off a phenomenon called craving. So why can't I just have one or two? There's a few reasons, but we're going to talk about the body. We're different than other drinkers, than the moderate drinker, than the hard drinker. As we go through this book, you're going to see how they continually separate us from other drinkers, the average tempered drinker. They put us in a class by ourselves. Over and over and over again, they will separate us. So what goes on with us once we drink? The craving for us is always intensified, never satisfied. More for me was the drink. There were times where I could have one or two, walk away and say, see, I did it, only to be bitten once again and then go on another drunk. My body is different from the normal average temperate drinker. It just is. I crave more alcohol. It says it did not satisfy us to be told that we cannot control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we are in full flight from reality, or outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. The physical factor, the symptoms, how it manifests on another drunk. What we need to take a look at is what kicks off the phenomenon called craving. Why do I pick up the first drink in the first place? If I know I can't stop once I start, that I lose all control once alcohol goes into me, what brings me back to a drink? Being in rehab, cut loose from a rehab after 9 weeks and getting drunk 2 days later. Going into my second, third, fourth, fifth rehab. Some of us have been put away in jail. Whatever it may be, whatever the consequences were, what makes us go back to drinking again? Why? Well, all action is born in thought, so somewhere my mind is taking me back to a drink, which a doctor's opinion is going to talk about also. The main problem, it tells me in my big book for the alcoholic, centers in the mind, not the body. My mind will tell me to go back to a drink. Once it convinces me of drinking, I pick up a drink and I kick off the phenomenon called craving. And I have no idea what's going to happen to me. I was one of those people who would say, well, this is what happens to me once I start to drink. If I'm lucky, I'll wind up in rehab. I'll probably wind up in jail. But the truth is, I have no idea what's going to happen to me once I start to drink. So I have this mind that's convincing me to drink regardless of the consequences. In fact, it won't even let me see the consequences. Page 24 talks about that. It convinces me to drink. I pick up a drink. I kick off this phenomenon called craving. Now, most people out there, civilians, who drink, have a couple get drunk and then show up for work the next day. I have no idea. My book tells me where alcohol has been involved, we've been strangely insane. So, when I was a kid, I was being taught how to iron clothes. I was a little guy standing up on a chair ironing clothes. And I remember going to flip the pants over, and my hand backed up against the hot iron, and it hurt like hell, and I had a little blister, and my mom put some ointment on it. I'm a little older than way back then. I'm really careful around the hot iron. I do not have an obsession of the mind to put my hand on a hot iron and see if it's going to burn. I have common sense and willpower in that area. If that iron represented booze, Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy, or Bacardi, or Jack Daniels, I put both hands on and let's see what happens this time. Where alcohol has been involved, I'm strange and insane. There's something that goes on in my mind, a strange mental blank spot, whatever it is, will take me back to a drink. Well, here's something to consider. If the main problem for the alcoholic centers in the mind, where's the solution? It's a question. Anybody got an answer? Main problem centers in the mind, where's the solution? In the mind? Yeah, that's what I said. It's an awakening in the spirit. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Once I wake up spiritually, once I have an experience with this power, my mind is no longer telling me to go drink. Regardless of what's going on in my external world, it ain't. If you will, drinking is removed from the equation. We take a look at step 10. It tells us we've been put in a place of neutrality, safe and protected. The problem has been removed. It's done for us. So if the main problem for me centers in the mind, the solution is in the spirit. Let's take alcohol and put that aside for a moment. And currently, for those of us who have been around here a little while, And we're not thinking about drinking, but alcoholism goes underground, resurfaces elsewhere, and we're experiencing strange mental blank spots in other areas of our lives. We have unmanageability in other areas. We're going on sprees. Anger sprees, fear sprees, sex sprees, money sprees. Sprees. Emerging remorseful with the firm resolution, I ain't going to do it again. And then we go back again. What about that stuff? Where does that come from? My mind, the thinking mind. So where's the solution? A new experience with this power. Over and over and over again. We go from dot to dot to dot. We experience this power. We suit up, show up, we do this work, and we're taken to a place. I remember telling my sponsor, well, when am I going to have this experience? When am I going to wake up and be like you? He says, well, not by Thursday, that's for sure. I thought I could do something. I thought I can do something to will myself into waking up. I thought I can do something to will myself to have an experience. But that's self-reliance. That's willpower. And that has nothing to do with this great power called God. We're taken there. Okay, let's go over to XXV. And let's understand that it's a doctor who's writing this. It says the subject presented in this book. And what's the subject presented in this book? Well, the way I have been taught and experienced, the subject of alcoholism and the spiritual awakening. The psychic change, as Dr. Silkworth refers to it. The subject presented in this book seems to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. I say this after many years' experience as medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. There was, therefore, a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute a few words on a subject which is covered in masterly detail in these pages. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology, or as what we would call it, the spiritual awakening, the psychic change, a change in attitude and outlook upon life. Page 24 refers to it as the great. Page 25 refers to it as the great fact. That some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application, how to do this, presented difficulties beyond the doctor's conceptions, our doctor's conceptions. They had no idea how to apply this. Skip down to the next, next sentence. It says, with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good, or as what we would call it now, God, that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care, that's Bill Wilson, in this hospital, and while here, he acquired some ideas which he put into practical application at once. He didn't wait a year to go sponsor someone. Evie showed up to Bill Wilson's door with about 2.5 months sober. Bill Wilson showed up to Dr. Bob's door with about 6 months sober. So how come in some meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous we hear get a sponsor with a year or more sobriety? What does that have to do with anyone having an experience with the 12 steps, having a year or more sobriety? Flip over to the next page. It says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics, again, they're separating us, is a manifestation of analogy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker, and they just separated us from other drinkers. It never occurs in the average temperate drinker. This abnormal reaction to alcohol, this phenomenon called craving, never occurs in the average temperate drinker. My girlfriend has a half a glass of wine and stops. Or she won't drink at all. And I have a dear friend of mine who calls that alcohol abuse. I'm sober 16 years and I sit there like this just looking at her. How do you leave a half a glass of wine or say, I won't have any when it's offered to you? Because I can never pull that off successfully. Maybe once or twice, but not successfully. But that's how civilians operate. We can't. It says these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit, found they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up with them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. I love this next paragraph. Far the emotional appeal seldom suffices. Now, I went to the University of Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, so I had no idea what frothy meant. And it was explained to me. And it's pretty much like this. If you love us, you'll stop drinking. You're going to lose your job. Please stop drinking. The children are experiencing this because of your drinking. Please stop. My dad tried father emotional appeal for years. He even tried threats. He tried everything. But the needed power in me was not there to stay stopped. I can never pull it off. So my book warns me here that father emotional appeal seldom suffices. I mean, you'll hear it many times in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here, my wife is really coming down on me. I got to do something about drinking. And I'm saying, in trouble already. Hasn't conceded. Isn't here to do it for, because I need to be here. It's my wife brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, some people do get sober with that, but my experience has been far and few. In between, I mean, it just doesn't happen that often. You know, my boss sent me to AA because I'm screwing up on a job. My EAP counselor sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It says in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if we are to recreate our life. And because we're around Alcoholics Anonymous a while and doing this deal, does that mean we cannot continue with this power to recreate our life? God's always creating, and we have deeper, effective spiritual experiences with this power, continually recreating our life. Take a look at if you do this work and the old ideas are cast aside, old belief systems are cast aside. Removal, removal, removal. What we're doing, in essence, is recreating our life, making new again because of this power, and we get freer and freer and freer. One of the questions I had to sit with very simply was, Peter, how free do you want to be? Skip down to the last paragraph, please. It says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. And that's coming from my mind, not the body. To them, or to me, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes by taking a few drinks. Drinks I see others taking with impunity. So I drink to seek relief. I drink to seek freedom. I drink. If I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous a while, and I talk to those who have been here a while doing this deal, taking a look at where we are currently, am I experiencing being restless, irritable, and discontented? And where am I going to seek comfort? Where am I going to seek relief if it's not a bottle? Because what I'm doing, as one of my teachers had told me, I think I'm seeking comfort here, I think I'm seeking comfort there, and I think I'm seeking comfort here. And what I'm really doing is running away from discomfort because the pain of being sober the way I am is too great. So currently, what kind of where am I? Am I experiencing being restless, irritable, and discontented, driven by fear rather than moved by God? How am I doing? Because we will experience strange mental blank spots on these sprees in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had them. Swearing off forever with the solemn oath, I will never enter that dangerous area again. I will never experience fear like that again. I will never experience an anger spree like that. I will never experience a sex spree like that or a money spree ever again. And then we're in and we say, how did this happen right in the middle of a spree? What am I doing? Or we come out on the other side saying, how did that happen? It ain't going to do it again. It goes underground and shows up somewhere else. How are we doing? It says, after we have succumbed to the desire again, which comes from my mind, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops. We pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with the firm resolution, I'm never going to drink again. This is repeated over and over. Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, and I'd like you to circle the word psychic change, there's very little hope for his recovery. On the other hand, as strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once this psychic change or spiritual awakening has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary being that we be required to follow a few simple rules. Great information for someone like me who's suffering from alcoholism. Because they're telling me in step one that I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life has become unmanageable, right? Well, it's pretty obvious to see when I got here in 1988 that my life was unmanageable. And for most of us, I'm sure you can identify with that it was falling down from all over. It was coming down from every angle. My life was completely in the toilet. And powerless over alcohol. Step one tells me I'm drinking. Lack of power. Powerless. No choice, no control. Not only while I'm in a drinking spree, but preceding the drinking spree. Because my mind is taking me back. Lack of power is my dilemma. Without power, my mind is going to convince me to pick up a drink again, and I can think it through all I want, because I'm going to get to that place where my mind says, wasn't that bad? We'll do it a little different. No human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. Aren't I a human power? Since when did I have the power to stop the drink? Never did. Can't now. So I need the psychic change of spiritual awakening, which no longer tells me to go drink. My mind has been changed. I've been made new. Great word in our book, they use the word reborn. My mind will convince me to take a drink. It kicks off the phenomenon called craving. It's changed with a spiritual awakening. Great stuff. Lack of power, choice, and control. I have no input into the decision that's made for me by something called alcoholism as to when I'm going to drink. I mean, I can't stress that enough, because unfortunately and sadly, you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, think the drink through, make a phone call, double up on your meetings. I talked about this earlier. All this conventional stuff, rather than seeking this power and getting busy with the work. It's so important to our survival here. And I experienced this firsthand with my sponsor. We had a guy sitting in our kitchen. My sponsor was in town for a workshop over in Queens. We had a guy who just was released from prison. He's been trying Alcoholics Anonymous forever. And he was thinking about drinking again. And there was my sponsor, myself, and about three other guys sitting in the kitchen. And I watched my sponsor walk this guy through the first three proposals in a couple of hours. Gave him some considerations. We all held hands. We did the third step prayer and immediately moved him into step four. And the guy came up with seven resentments. So right away I says, oh, it's nearly not enough. He's never going to make it. And my sponsor said, good enough. Let's get them done. Let's get some power. Let's get something done. At least maybe we can work on that stuff, seek this power, get instructions for 6 and 7, and go make amends on these 7 people. Lack of power is my dilemma. Without it, I'm drunk. Period. End of story. And I watched my sponsor firsthand move this guy through 7 people. Good enough. Let's go. What I've been guilty of, and I see it a lot, is we become so tight and so attached to the methodology, people die in the process. We become neurotic trying to do this work. Instead of keeping it simple and following directions, I've heard things about this book that make your head spin. And the I's have to be dotted, every T has to be crossed, and I did my 4-step a little better than you because I opened up my 3rd column this time and you didn't. You know? I mean, you hear this stuff. Lack of power is my dilemma. God doesn't make too hard turns for those who seek Him. So since when have we made this big book so complicated like trigonometry? It's simple. Just get someone who's had an experience with it, and they will share their experience from this book and walk you through it. And you will have your experience. But I've heard some strange things. But I'll never forget that experience, because I've had guys come to me in a similar jackpot. And it could have been real easy to go back to what I used to do and sit down and make this march through the book, like every word I read to them, their life depended on it, rather than the spirit that's in this book. And I have the privilege of sitting down with some people and moving them through. Moving them through, let God be the director here for me. There's a great line on at the end of Dr. Bob's story. And he says, I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book, though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. And I swear he wrote this for me because I was someone who would sit in the back of the room and hear people giving a talk, and I would say they don't know what they're talking about. I know better. And I come here in 1988, and I've remained to pray. And I came here to take, and I stay to give. Any questions so far? It's 9 o'clock already. Lord have mercy. I talked a lot. Any questions on what has been discussed? Yes. It says, you want me to read it? Uh-huh. It says, I earnestly advise every apple to read this book through and read this book through, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. Any other? Yes, in the back. I didn't get the last part of what you said about arrogance. I identify with arrogance, that's why. So already you're judging your spiritual condition. To live long enough spiritually successful or something like that, you said. So the question was pretty much, you came up with so many names for your fourth step, and your sponsor said not enough names. Is that correct? Uh-huh. I'm just curious, how many names did you come up with? Five names. Mm-hmm. I can only share from my experience of what took place in the kitchen a couple of years ago with this one gentleman, where he came up with seven names. My sponsor said, good enough, let's move. Have you been thorough? Have you been searching, fearless and moral? Have you prayed before you wrote your fourth step? So I'm not going to tell you you're right or wrong. That's not my call. I won't judge your fourth step like that. If you've been thorough and you've sought prayer before you wrote, and that's what your power revealed to you, then you need to go from there. And I'm sure more will be revealed as you move along. See, it's great to hear I went through the steps and I came up with 100 names the first time around. Impressive. You got 2 6 guns on each side of your hip walking into, you know, I'm a real AA guy. Got 100 names. And then I only came up with 10 names or 5 names. As we continue to do this work, we start to wake up spiritually and we start to see with different eyes and hear with different ears, and the heart seems to touch different things. Be in touch with different areas of our life, I should say. And so maybe, as you're working towards your disciplines in 10 and 11, more will come to you. Does that mean you did your fourth step wrong? Based on my experience, no. Because my experience has been this. If we seek this power and follow directions, the spirit of the fourth step is perfect. And too often, we judge fourth steps. Now, if you feel your teacher is wrong for you, well, that's between you and your God. I can't sit in judgment of the work you've done. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
I'm married, not alone. Yeah. The strange mental blind spot that you get, and you realize it, I mean, it's pretty clear cut sometimes for me, because you're supposed to get connected and you develop a project. How did you get out of it? Because you mentioned that you didn't,
A few times. Mm-hmm. I can talk about a fear spree. It was killing me. And my ego was not allowing me to talk about it. This was few years ago, I experienced really a bad fear spree, and you would ask me how I'm doing. I said, I'm doing okay, and I wanted to scream, I'm dying, because the fear was driving me. I got to a point where it got so great that I lost any kind of care of what you thought of me, and all I did was share with my sponsor. I've been blessed where I keep current with inventory. I write lots of, I kill a lot of trees. I use up a lot of paper. I'm always writing inventory. And I finally shared with my sponsor some things that were going on. And it was just a bit. But based on all the other inventories, we were able to connect the dots because the pain got that great for me. And if you will, I surrendered to it. I gave up. I stopped trying to control or manage it. And I kind of like my sponsors, I bop till I drop. And at that point, I was given some spiritual homework to work with out of this book. And there were some new disciplines, some things called an intent to work with and a meditation. And I turned this, like I did my drinking problem, to this power. There was no choice for me, and it was taken from me. I experienced fear. I experienced resentment. I experienced anger. Experiencing that those areas and living in them are two different things. I write inventory all the time. I'll write review, God willing, tonight when I get home. And I'll take a look. I'll constructively review my day. And maybe I'll see some things that I've experienced. Maybe a little anger, maybe a little frustration, whatever it was. Bill not giving me a compliment on my hair. I may write about that. But Bill's not laughing, man. No, not funny. Okay. But I'll write this stuff out. Does that mean I'm living in that place? No. So it was until I hit a bitter end. And share with my sponsor. But I can't talk enough about the importance of continually writing inventory. Nightly review. What are you doing about that? Are you writing anything during the day? Do you have a meditative life? Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I didn't catch the ending. How much did I contribute to recreating my life? How much of my life has been recreated? Ah, great question. My whole life. You hear what you're saying? We take this all to God, and you're setting up your life as you think it ought to be. What should I keep? Look at all the work we have. What should I keep? What should I let go? Our seven-step prayer talks about giving it all to God. This is God's deal. We let Him create us the way He needs to create us. Because we come in here with preconceived ideas and judgments and attachments as to how we ought to be. And I need to cut this loose, but I need to keep that. Right? And God does what He needs to do with us. That's why we do, one of the reasons why we do this work. Because God will mold us the way He needs to mold us. So I come in here thinking drinking is the problem, and that's a symptom of the illness. And God gets in there and recreates by giving me an awakened spirit. And attachments fall apart. Beliefs fall by the wayside. Old ideas fall by the wayside. And I'm made new. Again, great word in third step prayer. In the third step talks about being reborn. We are reborn, made new. That's God's deal. Okay? Mm-hmm. Anyone else? No more questions. Well, we're out of time, and I thank you for tonight and for listening. Thank you.